the world. The gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Christ. In the name of the living God. Amen. Forty years ago this summer, a massive heat wave crashed down across a broad swath of the United States, causing people to adjust their behaviors in order to be safe. In Arkansas, where I lived at the time, 47 days that summer topped 100 degrees, a record that still stands. I was registered that summer to go on a wilderness camp, a week-long off-trail backpacking trip in which six high schoolers joined two Episcopal priests in what was designed to be an eco-pilgrimage. We should probably have canceled, given the extreme heat, but we didn't. But I'm here, we're all still here to tell the story. We began atop Mount Magazine in west central Arkansas, the highest point between the Rockies and the Appalachians, and we wound our way down across several days into the river valley below. By the third day, when the patina of excitement had dulled by that stultified march and triple-digit heat, our leader, Father Arnold, who split his time as parish priest and National Park Service ranger, he cheered us on, saying that there was a creek just over the next hill, and it would be an oasis where we would find rest and plenty of water as a refilling station for our water bottles, now depleted of their restorative powers. He had made this same trip a month earlier, Father Arnold had, to plot the course. Only now, in the throes of this massive heat wave, the watershed where he thought water would be was bone dry, as was the next one, and the next one after that. I remember all these years later, with a furrowed brow, Father Arnold consulted his topographical map and plotted a new azimuth toward a deeper ravine where surely there would be running water, he thought. And we set out for that, off course, never intended to be where we would go. But it was a good call, as we did find a gentle brook there where we filled our water bottles, dropped our iodine tablets in, and then marked the time as we waited that hour before we could drink it safely. We removed our boots and socks and dipped our tired feet in the cool water, but had only been there scarcely 5 minutes before two men with shotguns approached us warily. Father Arnold sought to explain our circumstances, and he tried to employ some priestly benevolence, but it failed. They were unpersuaded. We were trespassing on private property, not welcome, and we must leave immediately or there would be violence. They did let us keep our water bottles, thank goodness. We found safer pasture later that day, and 3 days later, we made it to our destination, which was a Benedictine abbey perched on a knoll in the river valley, where we would spend a final night in retreat house beds, a retreat house that had air conditioning. We were greeted warmly by a monk there. He invited us to shower and then quizzically invited us to come back outside, reconvene on the backside of the retreat house under a stand of trees. We didn't understand. Except we went, and it was there on a hot summer afternoon in the shade of those trees and in the shade of the great abbey church towering behind us, and the monastic cemetery just off to our right, that the brother brought us an ice-cold watermelon. As sure a sacrament of hospitality and welcome as I have ever tasted. A sacred gift to slake our thirst. I can still taste the watermelon even now, that anamnestic memory. Sir, give me this living water that I may never be thirsty again. This story of Jesus' encounter with the woman at the well is a remarkable one, one of my favorites, known for its length. Did you know Jesus speaks longer to this Samaritan woman than anyone else has recorded in the Gospels? And he does so in the bright light and peaked heat of the day, of midday, when she must come to draw water, separated from the others. She is an outsider. But this is where Jesus shows up for her. Just as he showed up for Nicodemus in last week's gospel, in Nicodemus's nighttime of disillusion, down a dark alley of what he thought would be anonymity, because that would be where Jesus, where Nicodemus was ready to see Jesus. Only Jesus knows Nicodemus. Jesus knows this Samaritan woman, just as he knows each of us. And the invitation then repeats for you and me, where might you find Jesus waiting for you? Ready to have a conversation. He will speak the truth if you are willing to listen. He will be there, anticipating your arrival, knowing your heart already, and ready to offer you living water. It's been an interesting week, right? There's something surreal about all of this. Surreal in that our senses are perhaps dulled a bit as we try to take it all in. Wilderness time, some are calling it, or a Lenty Lent. For many of us, we may be inclined to think that we can only get a glimpse of Jesus in a church building, beloved as it may be for many of us. But this gospel passage and this Jesus that we claim to know invites us to reconsider that restrictive notion and look for Jesus to be sitting at some well in your harried life or some dark alley of your fear or confusion. He's there. He's waiting to have that conversation. He's waiting to drink in what you have to offer him. And he's ready to offer you living water. The truth is, my friends, I've been pondering a lot of things in recent days and reading and praying as I try to make sense of all of this. How do we do this communal gathering without really gathering in one place? How do we communicate with one another and with the sacramental presence of Jesus without sharing bread and wine? Well, let me say very clearly that I know and believe in all my heart that our sacramental theology is clear. We need not limit Jesus showing up or nourishing us only when we can taste a bit of bread or sip a drink of wine. We do those things, yes. We do them because we know we need them. And it's right to miss them and to long for them. And I long for the time that will come, hopefully soon, when we will all be gathered again, sharing the meal fully and abundantly once more. But there's an invitation and a challenge here, broadening our scope. to plot a different course than the one that we had planned. Our theology speaks of sacraments as outward and visible signs of inward and spiritual graces given by Christ so that we know that grace in our lives. Bread and wine and baptismal waters, yes, those are outward and visible signs of the inward and spiritual grace to be received. Sacramental grace, the gifts of God for the people of God. But we need not limit the gift of God's grace to these two great sacraments, even if they are central to our identity and practice. We hold in our tradition, stretching back centuries, back to the early days of the church, that if for some reason one cannot consume the bread or the wine for reasons of illness or disability, and I would extrapolate here this morning, friends, to include the quarantine for the common good, that one's prayerful assent is full participation in the Eucharist, even if from a distance. And that prayerful assent is sufficient to experience the mediation of God's gift of sacramental grace to you. With that in mind, later on in your service leaflet, we've included some prayers lifted from centuries ago from St. Augustine and others that are invitations for you to pray in your home while the distribution of communion happens here. But I want to be clear about one other thing, and it is, as Anglicans, we do not limit divine grace to church buildings or sacramental rites in them. We just do not. There is a question, a rabbinical type question in our catechism in the prayer book that says this. It says it to you and me. Is God's activity limited to these rites in church buildings? And the answer, no. God does not limit God's self to these rites. They are patterns of countless ways by which God uses material things to reach out to us. Outward and visible signs of the grace, the blessing received for our benefit, given and received. Living water shared on the lip of a well at high noon, or watermelon next to an abbey graveyard, or a meal your family may share today, or the scent of blooming flowers. God's grace is not quarantined to a church building. So look for the outward and visible signs of spiritual grace waiting to surprise you, to bless you, and nourish you. They are there, common things made holy for your spiritual benefit. And look for Jesus, who waits for that conversation you are longing to have, the sort that stills your soul and lends meaning to your life. He will speak truth to you, life-giving truth, if you are ready to listen.